Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of Refresh Your Wealth. We're coming to you live on Blog Talk Radio. This is the show that we don't have a chance to edit and modify and digitize and make it sound as good as Dave Ramsey because we're here right now, live, taking your questions.
Yeah. I'm going to say edit out right. And any dumb things that we say, you know.
Yeah, there's a list.
We keep all the dumb things in every week, actually, so including this week.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we're excited to be here with you. So we're going to take live callers for those that want to call in. We have some regular callers here and there. We appreciate your questions on point and not, you know, the life history of your grandma's estate. You can always set up a consult with one of our tax lawyers or accountants. We're definitely a team. Matt and I have been training our team members for years, so we hope to wow you from that aspect. But if you have a question today, the phone number is 646-668-8326. I'll repeat that, 646-668-8326. Now, if you want to write that down and have it handy, maybe in your phone is Refresh Your Wealth call-in number. That number never changes. You can call that in 2 to 3 weeks when we have our next call-in show. And if you're on our newsletter, you'll get plenty of notice of that, 24 to 48 hours notice. So other than that, you can email us your questions, and that's what we're going to focus on primarily are those email questions. And I don't know, Matt, any other niceties, general news updates you want to give? Anything exciting that people need to know?
Man, I was trying to find some helpful, exciting, good news out in the world today. In Arizona, you know, it's just all about our COVID cases going crazy. So, but hey, the July 15th tax deadline is, you know, you still got 2 weeks there. And listen, last week, if you need some good last-minute tax planning tips, listen to last week's podcast, on last-minute tax saving tips. So, of course, one of the ones I always love to remind people about is your IRA deadlines. For Roth IRA, traditional IRA, even HSA, all that stuff, is July 15th. So just consider that. You got a couple weeks left.
Yeah, and that's a good little tip to start out with. Everybody out there, you can't believe how many people we talk to that say, well, my accountant said I can't do a Roth. I make too much money. And I'm shocked at that. The backdoor Roth has become so common in the financial industry. It just shocks me. So anyway, I want to say this. I don't care if you have a 401k at work and you maxed it out. I don't care if you make 500 grand a year. I don't care if you have kids or no kids or single or married, young or old. You can still fund a Roth IRA, and then you can invest it in what you know best. And you can still fund what we call a backdoor Roth for last year. And what you do between now and July 15th is open a traditional IRA and then immediately convert it to Roth. You don't get a write-off, but now you have this little tax-free ATM to invest with. There's a one-click application process that no other industry provider has, as far as we know of, is certainly in the self-directed world. And you can go to directedira.com, get on the chat line, give any of our people an email. We'll send you the link. But you go to new forms. At the very bottom, it's going to say, I want a self-directed Roth. Now you don't have to apply and go through 9 steps at Merrill Lynch or Edward Jones. You can do it all in one step. And if you do it by July 15th, you can get it funded for last year and then turn around and fund this year's anytime you're ready. So, Matt, how was that summary, huh?
I like that. I mean, and I, you know, we got a lot. Mark's got videos. I got a detailed article on the backdoor Roth IRA. Just be careful what you're Googling out there when you're searching for that. But go to our sites or, you know, our YouTube channels. You'll get what you need.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, okay, when we do our open forum, we do not do our regular weekly tax and legal tip. What we do is just jump into your questions and cover as many as we can, and we'll dive into last week's, where last open forum's questions as needed. And we also try to do first come, first serve. So we've got some questions that came in at 4:05 a.m. So I'm like, I was up late getting the newsletter out, and someone was right there. And this is Jasmine. So I think, Matt, you got the same email from her. Do we want to start with that question? Do you want to go for it?
Sure, yeah, fire away.
Okay.
Yeah, you want me to do that question? Okay.
Well, I don't
know.
I've been talking a lot today.
She was first.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Jasmine's first of all, she says, thanks for all the knowledge bombs that you drop. And we appreciate that. All right.
And St. Louis, Missouri, too. Nice job.
Okay. Yeah. From St. Louis. All right. Okay. Question she has is, I'm starting a business with the goal to sell the business for $1 million in 5 years. What is the best entity and tax strategy so I pay less taxes when I sell? All right. Well, now this, let's assume this is an ordinary income business. If this was real estate, a real estate business, and let's say rental properties, you might have other things you're going to think about, a 1031 exchange or some other tax deferral or tax strategies. But let's just say this is an operating business. When you – the first thing is understanding when you sell a business, there's two ways that you sell a business. The first way you sell a business is you sell the assets of the business. You don't sell the company itself. So let's say that I – let's say that this was a – I don't know. Crap, what business do we want to make this?
Well, let's say it's a restaurant. You know, it's just an operational business.
Okay.
Right?
All right. Okay. Or, yeah, any service business, whatever. Okay. So when you go to sell the business, you can sell it as an asset sale. So someone could come in and say, I don't want your company. I don't want Jasmine LLC or Jasmine Inc. I just want to buy the name, and I want to buy all your equipment and your customers and your goodwill and all your infrastructure, right? And so they would buy through what's called an asset purchase from you. And so in an asset purchase, they're going to buy the goodwill of the business. That's kind of like, you know, the name and the reputation you have, the customers. They're going to buy your equipment and inventory if you have that. They're going to buy your intellectual property, your name or trademarks, anything like that. And so when they buy under an asset sell, you're basically selling assets and generally getting capital gain for most of those. And then you could get ordinary income on some things. Like, let's say you agree to stay on and do some consulting or something like that. Then they'd have to allocate some of what they're paying as ordinary income. Now, most businesses, and if you're selling for $1 million, are going to be asset sales. Because when you sell a business, a buyer doesn't want to buy Jasmine Inc. or Jasmine LLC, no offense, but they don't want all the liabilities that you've had over the last 5 years in starting this business. So from just a business standpoint, most buyers of small businesses for $1 million are just going to buy your assets. So they ain't buying your stock. They're not buying your LLC interest. And so in that case, there's really not much planning to do except make sure you got the right entity for how you want to run and operate the business, which would generally be an S corporation if this was, let's say, the restaurant or a service business. But then in that case, you're really just selling the assets. And that's going to – most of it should pass through as capital gain, which is good. You know, you have a max of 20% there on the federal side. You'll have some that could be ordinary income depending on some tax issues and whether you're staying on to help or not. Now you could do a stock sell or LLC interest sell. But that's less common for a $1 million business. I don't know. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah. I like it. Good points. And I would say this, the part that kind of not concerns me, but where I'd focus, if Jasmine called up and said, hey, I've got a business worth $1 million and I want to sell in about 3 to 5 years, what should I be doing now? Okay. Well, there's a chapter of this in my newest book, Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom. You hear that? Business Owner's Guide to Financial Freedom. You're not going to call your stockbroker. You're not going to call your banker, your lender. This book is tailored to you, and it's subtitled What Wall Street Isn't Telling You. So if Jasmine called, or if any of you are thinking, hey, I got a pretty good business here. It could be real estate. It could be operational. I want to sell in 3 to 5 years. Okay, well, that list, Jasmine, is going to be very – or my comments are going to be very different than what Jasmine said. Jasmine said, I am starting a business with a goal to sell the business for $1 million in 5 years. All right, cool. I want to give Jasmine kudos for thinking about tax structuring right now for the sale. But I would say, don't worry about it, Jasmine. Right now, you need to freaking make that business worth $1 million. And once, as you get closer to that point, then you're going to have that once a year or twice a year consultation with your tax lawyer, our office maybe, where we can make that plan. We can start talking about some of the particulars and what type of structure you are. But right now, Jasmine, don't worry about selling. Worry about building. And you need to consult with someone that can design the right entity. It could be an LLC that turns into an S-Corp. It could be an S-Corp out of the gate. We don't even know what your business is. So when you say what entity is best, I don't know. So set up a half hour to an hour with your trusted professional that's got tax and legal background. And boom, that's what I'd worry about, Jasmine. So I think you're a little premature on the sale issue because of the way you phrased your question. That's what I would say. All right, Matt, what do you got?
Cool.
Next question. Do you want to choose one?
All right, this is from Curtis. Yeah. Yeah, this is from Curtis. He also, and I think, yeah, said, great show. You've both helped me in my business more than you'll ever know. Thanks, Curtis. We appreciate that. He says, can I use my Roth solo 401k to pay for my kids' college costs, i.e. tuition, books, and living expenses? Okay. Tricky question, first of all, Curtis. So, yes, you can use the Roth solo 401k or anybody with a Roth 401k. You can use that as a way to pay for kids' education expenses and things like that. And Roth IRAs are more common for that, but you could be doing a similar strategy with the Roth 401k. What we're doing, though, here is there's two different things. A lot of people, when they focus on taking money out of their retirement account for college, are looking at traditional funds. Because there's all these exceptions where you can take the money out of your IRA or 401k to pay for yours or your kids' college or higher education costs, and the 10% early withdrawal penalty is waived. You know, you still pay taxes on it when you pull it out, but you get a waiver of the 10% early withdrawal penalty. And for traditional accounts, that's great. That's a nice thing to have. If, you know, we're not great fans of robbing your retirement account to pay for your kids' college, just as a general rule of thumb, let me just say that. But
yeah.
Assuming, Curtis, you've otherwise got the retirement account resources for yourself, and you're like, hey, I just, you know, let me dip into my Roth 401k. For the Roth accounts, the Roth solo 401k or the Roth IRA, we're not looking at using the higher education penalty-free withdrawal rule. We're going to just take out your contributions with no penalty or tax at all. Because in the Roth IRA, as does work in the Roth solo K, you can pull out your contributions without penalty or tax. And so now any investment gains or growth you've had in the account, you'll have to pay penalty and tax to take out. But we do like it for the money you put in, you can pull out. No penalty, no tax. You could be using that money for anything, whether it's something useful like your kids' college tuition or going to Vegas and blowing on a weekend.
Yeah, and I don't know if those are both, in my book, almost the same. Blowing it in Vegas for the weekend or paying for your kids' college, same category for me. I'm not kidding. I have had so many. You think I'm joking, but I've had so many people on phone calls around the country and in-person conferences and on an in-person meeting that are in their 50s and 60s, scared to death about retirement. And I go, hold it, you didn't save for retirement all these years? Well, we used it to pay for my kids' college. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And they're starting over. Now, some of you listening have maybe done that. I don't want to say you're stupid. I'm not. You love your children. You wanted to help them. Paying for kids' college and all the ways to go at it is a very touchy subject. Parents have very, very differing opinions on how they handle it. Matt's and mine's family have different ways. I've had a different way of handling it than with my than my parents did. So I'm not going to go there. But what I am saying is I like what Matt said. If your retirement is already taken care of, then let's talk about this. If not, I want your kids going to junior colleges until they can transfer to a four-year university. I want to look at grants. I want to see your kids working through school. I do not want to see college debt. I want to see a pragmatic approach. By the way, people, your kids do not need to graduate in 4 years at Michigan State or USC, and everybody's in debt $150,000 to $200,000. Get over it. That is not the way to do it. It is a crisis in America. And dumping your retirement plan to pay for it is equally insane. And I may offend someone that's already done that. Let's dig you out of that hole. Matt, any thoughts before I give my tip on this? Because I get a tip.
Yeah. I mean, we run into lots of clients who have done that, who have, you know, they had a few kids go through, they've paid for their college, and they wanted to do that, and sure, that's admirable, but they weren't in a financial position to really do that. They really had to rob from their retirement or equity in their home or other things to do that. And if that's the case, if that's what you're doing to pay for college for your kids, like if your income doesn't justify it, you don't have other savings or ways to pay for that, then you're basically robbing from your own future to help your kids. And when you're not in a financial position to do it, I'm sorry, you just shouldn't be doing that. And your kids may need to get some student loans. Even though, Mark, we don't want student loan debt, let's be real. Some kids are going to need to get an education. Some parents aren't going to be able to pay for it. Don't go to the USC, you know, unless your dad's Massimo and your mom's Aunt Becky, and you can get in and they'll pay for it. But, you know, for everyone else, you know, just like you said, junior college, go to the state school, these things, and be modest about it. But anyways, for the boomers right now, that's a crisis. We run into so many people that have made that mistake.
Yeah. And so I wanted to give a quick tip, and I apologize, Matt, walking over you here. I just want to quickly move on to the next call, but I will say this as my tip. So, Mark, what do you do if I want to build tax-deferred wealth for my kids to go to college? Number one, start a Coverdell IRA, which is like a Roth IRA for college. You don't get a tax deduction on the way in. It grows tax-free, and you can self-direct it, and you can pull it entirely out for any college expense for your kids, and you can use it just like a Roth. It's called a Coverdell. Cover your head, Coverdell, as in Dell computer. I've got a YouTube video out on that. Type Kohler Coverdell, and you can still fund those right now before July 15th for last year for your kids. And there's a backdoor Coverdell strategy if you make too much money. You can only put in $2,000, but if you start now and start self-directing, we have clients that get significant 10, 20, 100% returns in their self-directed IRAs with unique privately held investments that they have in their back pocket. And you can do that with a Coverdell. Number two, start a Roth IRA for your kids. Get them on payroll. Heck, if you're going to pull out your contributions to the Roth for their college, at least pull out their contributions too, and then let the investments inside of that ride. 529s, I'm not a big fan. You can't self-direct them. The rates of return are not great. But if grandma and grandpa want to give you money, throw them in a 529, I guess. But Matt, any final words on that?
Yep, no, great points. Love all those. Those are better alternatives, I think.
Yeah. Okay, David asked a question. I'm going to take first stab at this. Matt is our IRA 401k expert. And then we'll get on to some non-IRA 401k questions, people. Just for a couple. Matt, he says, I have both a self-directed Roth IRA LLC and a Roth solo 401k, about $32,000 total between the two. My objective is to get into rental property, creating cash flow to build up my Roth accounts. Cool. In the meantime, I need to raise capital, and I'm currently seeking full-time employment. All right, you've got a lot on your plate, David. So he's trying to build his Roths and look for a job right now. My first priority is get a job. That's always more important than playing around with your Roth accounts. He says, I want to purchase a laptop to research and purchase tax sale properties using some of this money in the most tax advantageous way, about $1,300. Okay. Am I better off taking a loan from my 401k and paying it back or using money from my IRA LLC? Another idea, I have a couple of LLCs set up for investing property, but no current revenue in those businesses. Should I use credit for a tax write-off? Thanks, Matt and Mark. Wow. Okay, David, you threw out a lot. First of all, I want to give you a two thumbs up for effort, ingenuity, asking such a question that's got personal, a lot of personal issues of struggling. I mean, if you're seeking full-time employment, that is a really stressful time in your life. And I can understand that you need a laptop to get some of your investing going. I'm just going to be blunt and go right at it. Number one, do not worry about investing or your rentals or the Roths right now. Find that perfect full-time job and maybe even a part-time job on top of that if you need to build wealth. Number two, you are not going to use your Roth money or 401k Roth money to buy a freaking laptop. Not good. I would not borrow from your 401k to do that either. If you're like, I need a laptop.
We don't want to be in front of the tax court judge trying to convince them that that was okay. They ain't going to like that.
Right. No. And if you say, well, I'm just going to take a loan out of my 401k to buy a laptop. No, not good. Get a job. Get a part-time job. Go do some work online on Upwork. Go home to your grandparents and say, I'm going to landscape your backyard for $1,300. Go buy a used laptop, whatever it takes. But do not, again, sacrifice future wealth, retirement planning for a current business expense and certainly not your kids' college. So I would just get to work, David. Take your time. Don't rush. Get some income coming in. Get some emergency funds. Go do Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University. I have a feeling there might be some credit card debt out there. Let's get rid of that. So that's my take. Matt, any words for David there?
Yeah, I disagree a little bit. You cannot use the retirement account money to buy the laptop. But I do like using retirement accounts where possible to help you start a business. You know, so let's say it's the 401k where you can loan half the balance not to exceed 50 grand. Still right now, you can actually loan 100% of the balance not to exceed 100. That was part of the CARES Act from a few months ago. So I like people tapping their retirement account to start a business. Sure, it's risky. Starting a business is risky, but going in debt's bad too. And a lot of businesses do take a little bit of capital to get started. And so if you have a business that you're wanting to start and you need a laptop to do that, I'm okay with that. I actually take the loan from the 401k for that. There's no penalty. You're required to put it back in. If you don't, it's a distribution. And I help clients with that all day long. Now, I don't want you to blow the money. And if you're like, well, I want to take the money out for living expenses or stuff like that, I don't love that. But I think if you're doing it strategically to start a business, to get that capital, I'm for it. But you have to do the loan. You can't just spend it out of the LLCs or out of the 401k directly.
Okay, you want to go at it, Mr. Sorensen? All right. Spar on the weekends. I box on the weekends. I'm an old man that, you know, I can take a punch, and I'm going to throw a couple back. I'm going to just read David's email on the face of it. And I got, David said, I want this laptop to research and purchase tax sale properties using some of this money in the most advantageous way. Now above, he said, my objective is to get rental property and create cash flow to build my Roth accounts. I think this is where a consultation comes into play because I kind of got the feeling that this laptop was to help him build the real estate business that's inside his retirement accounts. And if you're borrowing money to buy a laptop to go invest your Roth, that's not going to be a write-off. That's not a business. You do not have a business if you're buying stuff to manage your retirement accounts. Now, then you did throw in a curveball at the end of your statement. You said, well, I have a couple of other LLCs for investing, but those don't have any revenue and no properties. Well, okay, so you want to buy the $1,300 to do those other LLCs? or you want the $1,300 laptop to do your Roth retirement accounts. And so in a consultation, I think the jury's out. Matt may be right. I may be right. He may be wrong. I may be wrong. So we need more facts. But hopefully you people are seeing how we approach this. You got to be careful saying, I like Matt's point. Mm-hmm. We're going to start a business, but that business better not be your retirement account business. That's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if he's got a solo K anyways, that means there has to be a business that adopted the solo K, right? There has to be some business out there that he's doing for, you know, if you have a solo K, that's for anybody that wants a solo K. You can't just have a solo K. You have to be a business owner. You have to have a business.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have made contributions to it, you would have had to have income in that business. So, but so we're taking a lot for granted, though, here, David. Anyways, hopefully those answers help.
Well, Matt raised my bet. Called it and raised it two more. I think we're just going to have to, the jury's out. We're going to have to get Matt, we're going to have to get David on a phone call with Matt and we'll see. Okay, we've got a live caller. This is Allie in Texas. We've got to get down to Texas to do a workshop. That was on our plans this fall, Allie. And then this little thing called COVID hit.
Come on.
Ugh.
Last fall, you mean?
We'll get there eventually.
Now, I'm going to bring this up, Allie, too. Matt got tested. Okay, Austin. We'll do Austin.
What?
See, on this COVID thing, Matt got tested, too. Mm-hmm. Matt, was it painful? Does it suck? Is it really – does it hurt?
I mean, it's
comfortable.
Not really, but it's not like you want to. And, you know, negative, you know, out of precautions, just so everybody knows. But, it's not great.
We're glad. We're glad you're negative.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you guys for answering my call and for all your podcasts and information. And I had a quick question about deductions, business deductions. So I have a couple of rentals in in an LLC, and then I also have. I also have another LLC that I created because I wanted to actually buy some rentals in Texas, but I still didn't actually use that LLC, so I'm just kind of like paying my my yearly dues, whatever they are. And so I had a question. I wanted to do this real estate coaching program, and it's super expensive. It's $20,000, but I want to see if it would be deducted if I can, if I would be earning income this year from that Texas LLC, would I be able to deduct it, or should I, is that something I would be able to deduct from my other LLC that actually has rentals, or,
Okay. Matt, are we going to play virtual rock, paper, scissors, or do you want to? What do you feel?
I mean, I thought you're the CPA.
I'd love to tackle this. Okay. All right, Allie, here's the deal.
I wanted you to go first so I could, you know, determine if I wanted to, you know, try to correct you or anything. So.
Yeah,
oh.
I like it. Okay,
I'm waiting for both of you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Allie. I'll give you your best answer first here, but I think this is a very, very common question, and I think it's important all of you listen as I restate this a little more distinctly. And so forgive me, this is very, very common. Let's say any of you out there are thinking of doing some online or in-person education or coaching, and the price could range from $3,000 to $20,000 or more. That's great. We're not opposed to that. I think this is education, and I'm not sure which program, but in general, any sort of ongoing online education that you've done your research and they provide a lot of content, I'm not opposed to that in any way, shape, or form. I think a lot of that education is stuff you're never going to get in college, and it's the school of hard knocks that's going to teach you, if you don't learn from practitioners, paying a reasonable fee to learn that. So I think that's great. Then Allie says, well, okay, cool. I'm going to spend $20,000, but am I going to get a write-off for it? All right. The answer is yes, you're going to get a write-off. The big question is when? Because if you already have an ongoing business, and if Allie called me up and said, oh, yeah, I'm a physical therapist or I'm a chiropractor and I've got two offices and I make 200 grand a year, and I'm going to go do some additional business education that will allow me to also do some real estate investing, I'm going to say, boom, I'd like to write that all off as a continuing education expense as a licensed professional. And in a lot of ways, that would qualify, depending on how broad.
Hello? Hello?
Oh, let me jump in there. So,
oh.
I don't know what happened on, Mark might have dropped there for a second,
okay.
Can you hear me okay, Allie?
I didn't hear anything. Now I can, yeah.
Awesome. Oh, okay, so... Your biggest issue now, you have rental properties right now, though. You just have a Texas LLC, said, that doesn't have rentals, but you do have some rentals.
I have rentals in a different LLC in a different state.
All right. Okay, so the issue is going to be, and the question you're going to have is, when can you take it? And so in many instances, you're going to have a startup business expense of $5,000. But if you're going to take it in your Texas LLC, where you plan to operate and do other real estate activities moving forward, you have no income in there to offset it, so it's just going to sit there. And that expense is going to get taken over time, even though you may be able to take up to $5,000 in the first year. If you have no income to offset it, you're not even going to take the $5,000. So it's going to sit there until you have income. Now, maybe you get some income in 2020, and you're good, you're in business, and you can use it to offset it. If not, it's going to roll forward. But if you spend 20, the other 15, you're going to have to expense over time. So you're going to have to take that money and just expense it over time. And I forget the timeline. You have to amortize it.
If
it's 7 years, I forget. What's the years?
I'm back. 15 years. The studio dropped me for some reason. Yeah, over 15.
Oh,
if we can't. Yeah.
15, that's nasty. Okay, there you go.
Yeah. So
glad we got our CPA.
Allie,
back.
So, Allie, in summary, I'd say this: I like where your head is. I think it's good to do the investment if it makes sense. If you can, if you've got your life in order in other ways, or you have a credit card debt, do you have emergency fund? How's your general daily monthly income? And those are things we want to look at because we want you to go on this journey prepared. And sometimes we meet people that are like, "Hey, I'm going to go on this journey," and they grab a water bottle and just run out the door. Well, I'm not going to hike 20 miles with one water bottle. And when you're starting a new business, it is a journey. It's not a race. You shouldn't compare yourself to anyone. But you want to make sure you're financially and emotionally and physically stable and ready to go do this, make the investment. And if we can start making money right away, we're going to freaking start writing it off right away. If not, like Matt said, it could be over time. So I've got a phone call with clients this week that are upset. Let me say this, Allie, phone call with clients that are upset, that are like, well, we came to you as an accountant, and you're awesome. When we started our business last year, and we spent a bunch of money on startup costs, and we still owe. In fact, we owe more money. And I'm like, whoa, we can't write off everything under the sun in your first year. And so they're frustrated, and I'm really sad. So I'm going to try to help them figure that out. But okay, Allie, any final follow-up questions there? Sorry.
So basically you're saying that I should maybe write it off through my LLC that already does have rentals and has that income. But I would be more at a loss rather than, you know, because it's 20K and I have depreciation and all the other expenses from that business.
Yeah, I would say maybe write it off in those areas. I don't know how much. How much rental income do you have? And your picture is very important. And continuing education for a real estate investor of 20 grand, I don't know if that's going to be an immediate deduction. So we got to look at your whole picture, your life, are you married, single, what other income do you have, what other businesses, yada, yada, yada. But it's a write-off.
Yeah, and keep it off. If you write it off over there, depending on what, are you active or are you a real estate professional for tax purposes, you know, that loss might just sit over there and never be able to be used.
I am a real estate investor for tax purposes.
A real estate professional?
Just like looking.
You file as a real estate professional?
Looking. I mean, it'll be my first year, 2019, but I didn't file yet. But I have an extension.
That's worth looking at, I think.
But yeah.
Putting it on the rental side.
Okay.
But then also, what are you planning to do with that Texas LLC in the future? Who knows?
Yeah.
I have one other little question. I don't know if it's very short. If you guys have a chance.
Okay. Throw it out there, and we'll let you go, and we'll try and answer it quickly. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate it. So this is a question about also a deduction, possible deduction. So I was wondering if I bought, let's say, a weapon to protect my home office in this dangerous situation now, corona riots, all that, would it be a deduction?
Ooh, that's a great question. Okay, well, Allie, we'll let you go. And, of course, you're going to stay on the line and listen to the rest of the show. And I want to thank you for calling in.
Of course.
And if you get to Bucky, send me a T-shirt.
Your
I appreciate it. Okay. All right. Well, that's an interesting one, Matt. I haven't. No,
I missed that. What did you say? If she got a what for home?
A gun. A weapon.
Oh, a gun.
So if she bought
a gun.
Yeah. Now, this is very
interesting.
Yeah,
the old school home security system.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's throw this out there. Okay, is if you have a business and that with your assets could be stolen or you have customers coming and going and security is important, I'll ask all of you listeners, is a security system in your business a write-off? Yes, it is. Okay, now is this your home office? We're going to have a harder time because now you're getting a security system that also protects your personal life and personal home. I'm going to have a harder time writing that off. We're going to have to look at a percentage and square footage. It's going to be tough. But let's say Allie says, nope, I've got a standalone office. I've got inventory in there. I got equipment. I got employees. And it's in a bad area. And I'm really, really worried about theft and also some sort of burglary and I need a security system. Okay, perfect, write-off. Security dogs have also been approved as a write-off if they're full-time at the business location, and that's their primary purpose. I'm cool with that. Now, a little Fido, a little wiener dog, you know, at your home office is not going to qualify. So there's all these gray areas in black and white. We've got 50 shades here, and so it's really tricky. Now, could a gun be a write-off? Well, if I have a security guard and sitting at my office by the front door and I buy him a uniform and a gun and some pepper spray, would that be a write-off? Sure. I'm equipping an employee for the very primary purpose of security. Now, you buying a personal gun so you can run out and be, you know, Rambo in the office if needs be, or Liam Neeson. I you know, that guy's amazing. 60 years plus, still doing action movies. I want to be like that guy. But I think a gun is going to have a very personal use aspect that you're going to have to be able to prove that it's maybe secured at the business site. It's there in some sort of method and training, and you really have to substantiate it if depending on how personal of a weapon it is. Matt, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a stretch. I think a gun for a home office deduction. Because it's at your home, and are you really having it to protect yourself personally, or does this really have a business purpose to it? And, like, you'd have to have some reason that there's, like, something for your business that's at your home or location that makes you more at risk, I would think, or than individually. I just don't know that a general concern about your safety and you happen to have a business there, you're going to be able to write it off. I wouldn't think that counts. There's got to be some additional reason, like Mark said, like you have certain inventory or something that's valuable there that could be robbed that you would not have there if it's just your residence. But no, I've got 100 grand of inventory. You know, I sell electronics and I could come get robbed one day. And so I have a gun. And okay, now I'm letting you maybe, I think that's going to light gray for me. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. And I'll add one more word in there. I've got a great question here from Sharon. We have clients that are in the security business. And previously, police officers were able to write off all the weapons and ammo they would buy as an unreimbursed employer expense. But since the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, I can't write that off for my police officers anymore, police officers on a Schedule A. So they have to have a side business of any income providing security on the side. And a lot of comps do that. And so we've got clients that do provide security and personal security services and all those things. And are their guns a write-off? Absolutely. Kevlar vests, scopes, I mean, everything. And again, if it's necessary for your type of business, a weapon could certainly be a write-off. So that's where it's going to be very particular to someone's situation, Allie. Okay, Sharon asked a question, and I love this one. I would like to buy a fifth wheel travel trailer as a rental and set up an LLC for this business. All right, let's talk about that. That's great. I mean, this is a very common business now. There are Airbnb business for renting your RV when you're not using it. Very prolific in a lot of areas. People are making good money with it. And your RV becomes 100% write-off if you have it available for rent 100% of the year. When it's not being rented, you can use it once in a while. Personally, there's a day limit of how many times you could. But these RVs, I just saw yesterday at a work site, a client had come in to do all the drywall, and it was a commercial location. They were going to be there for 2 weeks. They brought their fifth wheel, and that fifth wheel was their quote-unquote on-the-job site residence rather than paying for a hotel. 100% write-off because they have a primary residence somewhere else. Matt, any thoughts? I mean, the RV business and the RV write-off is a fantastic one. But I'll ask this for you, Matt. Where does an LLC fit in that? Is that required?
No, totally not required, but I would consider it heavily if you're renting out to other people in particular, because there's some liability risks, of course, with what happens with that. And you know, the one thing I think on, you know, the fifth wheel itself, I mean, this is like attached to a truck, right? I mean, I'm not an RV guy, so this is like, so you're going to have some obviously. Let's be honest. I'm not an RV guy. I don't know these things, but I that's what I thought. So, but yeah, you're gonna have some liability issues with it. Somebody getting hurt on it, or something happening as it's being transported, and so you want to have limited liability for that. And you know, this thing falling off someone's car that you rented it to, or truck, whatever. I mean, these could be big liability issues. So, I definitely do an LLC. It doesn't affect your tax situation. You could still keep it. You know, just 100% owned by you and single member essentially, but it would give you liability protection. So I'd definitely use the LLC, but don't do an S corp or anything like that.
Say one more thing. No, I love it, Matt. I think you hit the nail on the head with the LLC. But Sharon, now Matt, Sharon throws in a twist. Her second. And Sharon could be a male or female, so forgive me. One of those adronymous names. The second sentence. Would the IRS allow this if I were to personally rent the trailer from the business as my home? All right. Now, Sharon, you just blew this great strategy out of the freaking water. I mean, you just torpedoed the whole thing. Okay. Folks, and this is an urban legend, and you're going to see fly-by-night type tax presentations online or around the country, and you're going to see it and go, this is just what I was looking for. And that's how scary the web is now. You can find anybody that will give you the answer you want.
Right.
But it doesn't mean, it doesn't mean it's the right answer. So some people are out there, well, I can use the Augusta rule and rent my own home and do this, and I can rent my own house out for my corporate parties, and I can rent my home for my business. And that. Okay. There is a sliver of truth in a lot of those strategies. And if you don't think, I know the Augusta rule. I mean, I'm not going to go there. And some of you are like, okay, I'm cautiously aggressive. I love to find write-offs, but I'm not going to put you in harm's way. And you trying to rent back an RV for your personal home is not going to fly. You renting back your own home from your LLC that owns it is not going to work either. And I could, if you want to have a conference call, if some of you have done it or you're thinking of doing it seriously, we got to do a whole show on some of these weird strategies that have a sliver of truth that have been blown out of proportion. So, Sharon, if you've got an RV, I got a Winnebago 30-footer mini. Love it. Freaking awesome. It's not a fifth wheel. Matt, let me give you a little lesson here. An RV is one you can drive. Okay. I'm just going to, so you know. Farming show. We went through a bull, a calf, a heifer, a cow, a steer. There's a lot of differences there, and it has to deal with their private parts.
Yeah.
But on an RV, an RV is generally in the industry one that you would drive. It's got an engine in it and da-da-da.
Okay.
A travel trailer. Okay, that's an RV. I've had to get used to this because, you know, I'm out there hanging at the truck stops with my Winnebago. I got to talk the talk. In travel trailer is one that you hook onto your hitch on your SUV or your truck.
Ooh, okay.
And you're like, bing, I'm out of here. That's a travel trailer.
Okay.
Sharing throughout the word fifth wheel. The fifth wheel is one of those weird little apparatuses that extends the size of your RV and hooks into the back of your truck bed. And this is where you've got those big F-350s, 250s, these big trucks, where the RV is connected. So,
got it.
Here's Matt.
So Uncle Eddie had an RV.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Christmas Vacation, that's an RV, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, just as Matt and I were interpreting an email just a moment ago, and by the way, Matt, I've taken some pictures with a wife beater T-shirt out there emptying the you know what, of the RV.
Okay.
For family's sake. You know, those pictures, they stay in the photo album for years. Okay, but here's the interesting part, everybody. If you've owned an RV, trailer, or fifth wheel, what's interesting about Sharon's email, and this is where I've seen into this and I wanted to make this comment. Sharon says, I am going to rent my fifth wheel travel trailer. Now, if this is a true fifth wheel, how in the heck do you rent a fifth wheel unless someone's got the exact proper fitting and truck that can handle this? Not very common. So I have a feeling, again, that Sharon is trying to find a way to backdoor their home into this full-time lifestyle RV strategy that I've talked about around the country for years. And being a full-time RVer and then trying to put it in an LLC and rent it back to yourself, Sharon, you're probably smiling. I know what you're trying to do. It's not going to work. And so a fifth wheel rental is very, very rare because people, you've got to rent the truck with it. You got to rent the truck. So most people are renting RVs and travel trailers. They're not renting fifth wheels. Now, someone may take issue with that. You can email me. I'll take some heat. But anyway, we can see right through you people sometimes on these emails. Okay, Matt, next question. You choose.
Oof. Yeah, I'm going to go off RVs, thankfully. I'll, you know, get to talking about something I do know about. This is Dan from Wisconsin. So he says, right now I invest with my self-directed IRA along with two other self-directed IRAs, and we each put equal equity into deals through a three-way LLC we set up with your firm. Okay, great. I now have others that want to invest with me using their self-directed IRAs. They're willing to bring all the down payment, 20% through their SDIRAs, and me doing all the finding, acquiring, an ongoing project management of the properties, and being the one to sign a personal guarantee on recourse loans since their IRAs are not allowed to. Would it be legal for us to structure the new LLC so that we each share all equity growth and cash flow 50-50, even though that is not the starting how equity is split? Okay, Dan, I love this question. And the short answer is yes. You've got a lot of flexibility you can do here. So you're doing your own investing with your other two partners. You guys have your IRAs. You're doing your own real estate deals separate. Now you got other people's IRAs who are presumably unrelated to you. They're not disqualified, right? It's not your spouse, your kids, or parents, stuff like that would be prohibited. But you got other people who want to just invest with you in deals because they're seeing you're doing real estate deals. And you're going to be personally involved now, personally signing the guarantee on the loans, managing the property, kind of being the work partner basically. I've done hundreds of these LLCs where we basically have a party who, this could be you, Dan, who is the work partner in the deal. And then there are IRAs that are essentially the cash partners in the LLC. And this could be you. And like you said here, maybe you put three or four others into an LLC with you with their IRAs. And then that LLC goes out and buys a property. And of course, when the property sells, the cash comes back, you pay back the IRAs, and then you split up the profits based on your ownership percentages. So you could be 50-50, Dan. You could, I mean, if you're good enough and you can negotiate, you could take 50% ownership of the LLC for doing the project management, being the work partner, and split up the other 50% amongst the cash partners with their IRAs based on how much money they're putting in. So absolutely you can do that. We've done it quite a bit. Those are called a multi-member IRA LLC in our office, which you're familiar with all the other IRAs you did previously. So, but yeah, we could definitely set up that structure.
Okay, I like it. Okay, we are going to jump over here in our last 10 minutes. I'm going to bring up the fun topic of the EIDL and PPP. Got a couple of unique questions here. I'm going to quickly comment on them, and then, Matt, you can add to them, or if you have another PPP take you want to throw out there.
Mm-hmm.
First question
yep.
is from Sal on the EIDL. Now, the EIDL, EIDL is a economic injury disaster loan. And Sal presents a very complex story, but I think it's worth mentioning. And then, Sal, if you want to consult on this, we'll have to. But he said this. This might be good for the listeners. And okay, he has three LLCs. He applied for the EIDL, not the PPP. We're going to leave that alone. He applied for the EIDL, which is a loan under each one of the LLCs and their unique EINs, electronic identification number. Two were approved. One was denied. Now, he said below, he says he included their email. I'm sorry, Sal, you forgot the attachment. But he says, I applied for all three under their unique EIN. Why, and basically saying, why were two approved and one not? And he goes, I've emailed them, I've applied again, and I don't think the SBA understands that there's three different EINs. They're looking at my social. And he said, then he quoted one of the emails from the SBA, quote, we have received multiple applications from your business for economic injury as a result of COVID-19. Your earliest application will continue to be processed, and we have withdrawn your application number for active consideration. Let me say this to Sal and everybody out there. If you have three different businesses with three different EINs that have three types of income and you want to apply for EIDL, do it. Is there anything wrong with that? No. Will you get all three approved? Maybe. Maybe not. We don't know. And the SBA is looking at the criteria that you apply with in a very, very short application. Are they looking at your Social Security number? I don't think so, Sal. I have not seen or heard that. I think this email you received was after you reapplied again. And then it said, they're basically saying, dude, we already denied you, and don't apply again. I found the SBA to be very helpful. I would call them, Sal. Do not email them. But that's just my take. I'm going to leave that out there. Keep applying for your EIDL. Call the SBA if you have a problem. I think the issue is they just don't want to give you money for that third LLC for some reason, and you're blaming your Social Security number. I haven't seen that yet. That's my take. Matt, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, my only guess is that you might be – maybe you're a sole prop on all those LLCs, and those EINs for those LLCs are just flowing down onto your one personal return. And, you know, I don't know, and they kind of realize this with the IRS or somehow that checked on your – with the EINs. But if they were separate tax return EINs, like partnerships or S-Corps or – I don't know how you're filing those tax returns, but if they're all flowing just onto your sole prop, your personal 1040 – that may have been the snag and why they're reluctant to give out multiple loans for multiple LLCs. I could see that because there's kind of a fraud risk for that where they were like, are these legit separate businesses? And so you probably just got kicked out of the queue somehow for that.
Okay. All right. We're going to – okay, I've got a PPP.
You want to hit the PPP ones? Okay.
Yeah, just let me hit one PPP, and then I'll let you – comment on that, and you can have the last question of the day of your choice. But I've got to say this PPP. First, for anybody out there that still has questions about PPP or EIDL, please go back to our show that we did live. You can get it on YouTube or on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify. We did one on talking about the PPP and the most recent law passage. Also, I've got an article on this at Entrepreneur, and it's in our newsletter. Tomorrow, Thursday, at 4 o'clock Mountain, I will be doing a live Facebook, YouTube broadcast. If Matt's schedule is available, he'll usually join me because he is so smart, and I mean that. I love this guy. Matt will be on there if possible. If not, I'll give it my best shot. And this PPP and EIDL stuff, Matt and I both understand it. We just have different ways of explaining it. So come back there tomorrow on Thursday the 3rd. And listen to that and watch that show live if you're still having confusion. And that's what we have here. This is a question from Robin. Robin says, I'm sorry to harp on the same issue, but I got the PPP loan in the 8-week period, and I used it. the appropriate money to bring back staff to work even though the school was closed, only to find out in the eighth week that the government had not only extended the program, they changed the payroll percentage from 80% to 60%. Okay, Robin, first misconception, it was never 80, it was 75%. 75% of it had to be used for payroll, and then you could get 100% forgiveness.
They lowered it, so why do you care if it went from 75 to 60? That's
right.
Good thing.
I hear you, Matt, and that's because there's some confusion here. I was going to jump to Robin's confusion, but I'm going to read her email here a little further. She says, when we have used all the money at that eight-week point, all I was concerned about was how to fill out the forgiveness form so the entire loan could be forgiven, as they kept telling us. Now I look, and this is all in caps, she's really upset. Now I look at the easy form. It looks simple. Now, by the way, I do three examples in my article, and I know these lines backwards and forwards. She says that on line 7, it says payroll costs 60% of your total payroll, blah, 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 and 55,000 is my forgiveness amount with 60%. It should be 80%. Why not? I'm getting screwed over here. I should have recourse. And if I knew there was other miscellaneous expenses, I'm typing this as I'm screaming here, and she's so nice, and I feel like I'm the victim here, and this is Robin's pretty pissed. Okay, so this is good. Now here's where Robin's problem is. I believe. Yeah. And she is so kind. She's like, Mark and Matt, thanks for taking the time, and I can't go to my banker. They're nuts, you know. So here's where Robin is off, in my opinion. If I could read this more slowly and all of you could digest it, I think this is the problem. Robin believed that if I spent 80% on payroll or 60% on payroll, the whole thing's forgiven. No, 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 no. Robin, if you got a $50,000 PPP, to get the $50,000 forgiven, at least 60% has to be payroll, or previously 75%. And then the rest of that amount that wasn't 75% or 60% still has to be paid for valid expenses that are allowed or more payroll. It's not that, oh, I got 50 grand. If I spend 40 on payroll, they'll forgive the whole 50. No, 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 no. The amount you use for payroll will get forgiven, and it better be 60% of the total amount, which is better for you, but the entire amount is not forgiven just because you hit 60% or 70 or 80. That's a qualifier in order to get the entire amount forgiven, and you better have spent that money on good stuff rather than a cruise or a car payment. You've got to make sure that you're careful there. So, Robin, I hope that helps. Read my article. Come to the live tomorrow. And on this PPP topic, Matt, do you want to add anything to it before you hit our final question?
Yeah, I'll just say every penny you spent on payroll is going to be forgiven. Anything on top of that, as long as you spend at least, that just sounds like you have, because you're saying you were basically spending 80% on payroll. So I'm presuming you already met the payroll cost rule, whether it's 60%, 80%, doesn't matter. But every penny you spent on payroll, you're going to get forgiven, plus your rent payments, you know, utility payments and all that. So now that it's gone to 24 weeks with people paying rent for multiple months, utility payments for multiple months, or having to, now you can take payroll out for 24 weeks, a lot of people are going to get 100% forgiven. So all these changes, when they came in and changed this, that was making it better for everyone. I don't know a change that made it worse. All those changes, lowering it 60%, giving you 24 weeks to spend it all instead of 8, it means you're going to get more forgiveness. So I think it's actually a good thing. I think you're kind of misinterpreting the change or the application somehow, but I think you're better off than where you started, actually. That's the good news.
Yeah, that's the good news. Now, we've got 1 minute left. It's not going to happen.
Okay.
But while we've got Matt live here on the show, are you committed to 4 o'clock Mountain tomorrow? Matt, will you be on the live YouTube, Facebook show for everybody?
Oh, this is being recorded. You're just like springing this on me. Perhaps. I'm going to have to check my schedule because I do have something there right now, but I might be able to move it, you know.
Matt, I love you. Hey, we love all of you. Everybody, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be here every week. We're still trying to just do our best and hang in there like a small business owner just like you.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.